Chapter 19. The Mycota Profundis. The long-dead builders of the Endurance would no longer recognize the interior of the battle barge. 10,000 years had passed since its keel had been laid, but time, even of so long a span, was not responsible for its transformation. Thick, poisonous vapor swirled through its corridors, growing thicker the higher up the ship's decks one went. At the very heights of its rotten command spires, the gas displaced the air and would kill a mortal man in seconds. The cowed tribes who made up the ship's mortal contingent were confined to the lower decks, where the air approached breathable, and the fog was confined to ceilings of the highest halls, snaked and coiled among the corroded ducts. Even so, they lived terrible, shortened lives, their lungs rotting from the moment of their first breath. To the demon Primarch Mortarion, the air was invigorating. He strode through its comforting billows. His robe sent it into a storm of complicated curls, where three lobed sigils and grinning skulls might be seen, though only for a moment. In the high levels he walked, the mist was liquid thick and hid the sides of the corridors. Glinting droplets made up the clouds, condensing on metal and flesh, and moisture beaded the Primarch's clothes. Other parts of the Endurance were sweltering as equatorial swamps, but the heights were chill as mountaintops, and here demonkin, immune to the effects of the toxic air, took the place of wretched humans as crew. The air aside, the machinery of the vessel in the heights required a certain touch. No mortal effort could ensure its smooth running. Coiled organic tubing took the place of metal pipes. Taut nerves replaced wiring. Rotting brain matter stood in place of circuitry nexuses, and demons trapped in warded pots did the work of cogitators. A thick plaque of pulsing flesh covered over the walls and made the floor soft underfoot. Where it had not been subsumed, the steel and iron of ancient imperial work was flaked with corrosion. Blackened plastic peeled from wiring. Everywhere was a state of decay. The fleshy parts of the Endurance teemed with disease that broke it down and digested it as quickly as it grew. Great patches of it were black with putrescence. Crops of livid cysts throbbed on the walls, trickling oil where they had burst. There were rooms where the flesh had died. There maggots fell as rain, and flies clogged the workings. Whole decks had been overtaken by fetid jungles. Others were thick with slime, where unnatural ecosystems had succumbed to virulent plagues, for the interior of the Endurance was a small part of Grandfather Nurgle's garden, dug up and transplanted into the fertile ground of the mortal world. It was a vital decay. The ship still functioned. It still moved through space as it had been made to. It quivered as its ancient engine stacks pushed it vigorously free of the Macragg system. Mortarion's personal domain differed in form to the chaotic machine life of the rest of his ship. He came to a door covered with throbbing, vein-like ivy. A pass of his cadaverous hand, and the door opened for him, sending the choking fog into a swirling dance. On the far side was nothing but cold, bare metal. The ancient magi who had built the Endurance would have recognized these halls. They were rusty, pockmarked by acid burns from the corrosive mists, but they lacked the fleshy vitality of other parts of the ship. Mortarion emerged into a spire whose floors had been cored out to make a single towering space. When completed, the alteration had sported decorative gargoyles, and fantastically detailed railings had edged the walkways formed by the edges of the removed floors. That was long ago. The statues were now nubs of iron, the railings dissolved to paper-thin fretting. The fog was at its thickest at the tower's peak, where it formed clouds thick enough to rain. A light, acidic drizzle fell from on high. Puddles of it sat in concavities it had dissolved in the floor. Mortarion stood at the base of the tower. With its interior structure removed, the true scale of an imperial battleship was revealed. The single tower was 100 meters across and 300 high. He raised his hands and tilted his face upwards. His yellow eyes closed, and he let the rain fall upon his face. It ran in greasy trails around the breathing mask embedded into his flesh. With a gurgle of pleasure, Mortarion shook out his double wings. They resembled those of a giant fly, veined and diaphanous. After a couple of experimental twitches, Mortarion set them into blurring motion, and he rose smoothly from the ground. His wings made a noise as loud as 100 chainswords revving, but he moved serenely, his long robes trailing after him, dripping with the liquids they had accumulated on his walk through the ship. He rose to the tower's top, where a pier extended from one wall. It was so corroded by the fog that it shook as he landed upon it. He folded his wings away back into his robe. As he walked to the pier, it swayed and squealed, letting out a shower of rust. But it bore him, surely, and he arrived at the door at the far end. Another pass of his hand sent the door grating into the wall. He went through onto a set of wrought iron stairs that curved up inside the skin of the spire. There were holes in the hull there, through which shone the steady burn of stars. But the mist was unaffected. The air was unaffected. Mortarion was unaffected. Where decompression winds should rush, there was dank stillness. The Endurance no longer obeyed the strictures of reality. A final door opened into the last chamber remaining in the tower. It had been in ages past the spire's viewing dome. Now it was Mortarion's horarium, his retreat, his sanctuary. A home away from home when he was forced to leave the comforting landscapes of the plague planet behind. He had never thought to leave the Eye of Terror. It amused him that he had. It was good to be abroad again. The armoured glass dome still covered the top of the tower, though the petal-shaped panes that made it up were broken in several places, and one was missing entirely. This did not affect the poisonous atmosphere nor the temperature. Rather than the killing cold of space, the dome retained the chill of high mountains, unpleasant but not deadly. If one looked past the reality-defying properties of the horarium, there were four items of note in the chamber. The first was its vast array of clocks. They hung from every part of the walls below the glass of the dome. They stood in tocking ranks upon the floor. Small carriage clocks and giant gilded edifices under glass domes occupied dozens of tables. Their ticking resounded loudly. A new chime went off every second, for the clocks ran asynchronously, marking as they did the time of many layers of reality. Every few minutes, the ringing of many bells would coincide and sound as a single, deafening round of mismatched peals. The largest of the clocks was the second item. Occupying the central portion of the room and twice the height of the demon primarch, it had three faces and stood on three legs, worked with a tripartite symbol of Nurgle. The legs did not obviously represent those of any kind of beast, fantastical or otherwise, but were made so that it crouched over the floor, giving the impression it was about to strike. Its faces were a meter across, and each had 7 hours and three hands with pointers made in the shape of flies. The time was approaching the clock's midnight. A massive scythe on a chain served as a pendulum. It swished across the space beneath the clock. Reality sighed as the blade cut into the very stuff of creation, and every tick-tock was the death of something fine. The third item was contained within the great clock. Atop the timepiece was a huge bell jar covered all over with arcane symbols. The lower half extended into the space between the triple faces. The upper half made a lesser dome below the greater. There was something inside. A prisoner. Its presence explained why metal tubes were attached to glass valves in the jar. They allowed certain poisons to be introduced, though not to kill. The jar was a device of torment. The thing inside the jar was no longer alive, but it could suffer. Streamers of corpuscent moved behind the glass. As Mortarion entered the room, they coalesced, becoming a monstrous alien face. Even in death, the soul's psychic potency was great enough to stop a mortal man's heart by sight alone, and then raise up his corpse to serve the creature. But to Mortarion, the killing scorn it broadcast was a balm.
"Good day, father," he said.
The Primarch's voice was ghostly, a deep, sighing whisper. For 1,000 years, Mortarion had pursued the soul of his adoptive father through the warp with packs of baying beasts. Over the landscapes of insanity and through the kingdoms of dreams, the pursuit had gone on. Mortarion had turned his face entirely from the mortal realm in those years, so bent was he on having his final vengeance upon the Xenos creature that had adopted him, used him, and had been slain by the Emperor when Mortarion had failed to kill him. Imprisoning his alien father's soul had brought Mortarion a modicum of peace the Emperor had denied him. The hunt was long ago, and the novelty of the prisoner had worn off. The Lord of Death paid no heed to his foster father's glowering and went to the clock's pendulum. He caught the scythe by the handle at the apex of its swing and unhooked it from the chain. Without the scythe, the clock continued to tick, defying the logic of real mechanisms. Mortarion weighed the scythe in his hand.
"Silence," he said, naming the weapon.
He ran his hand along the head. His dry hands rasped on the steel. Unlike most other things aboard the Endurance, the scythe was free of decay and sharp as a dying woman's curse. The fourth and final thing of note in the room was not visible to mortal sight. It had to be summoned. Mortarion stood under the centre of the clock, extended his right arm and opened his hand. He closed his eyes a moment.
"I call upon you, loyal servants of the Great Father. Commune with me in the name of the Sevenfold Path."
The vapours in the room thickened about the spot directly below the clock's centre. Mortarion stepped back. He rested his hand atop Silence's head, his robe stirring in the stinking wind, and waited. The fog whirled faster and faster until it formed a small vortex of black light. The vortex thickened, taking on the shape of a tall fungus. The flesh of it was ethereal to begin with, but grew more solid with every passing moment. Once solid, the fungus grew unnaturally fast, its rounded tip questing upward towards the base of the clock. From the bottom of his prison, Mortarion's father watched it approach, recoiling as it wormed its way within the clock and bumped the base of the glass, smearing it with poison. Black mycelium spread across the floor from the fungus's bulbous vulva. They threaded themselves across the floor, swift as serpents and gossamer fine, rising up and engulfing the clocks of the room in a stringy, slimy mat. Where they encountered Mortarion, they engulfed him to his waist. The demon Primarch closed his eyes, shuddering at their touch in a combination of ecstasy and abhorrence. Mortarion had never lost his disgust of warpcraft. The wind dropped. The fungus cap, a pale and narrow thing clasped close to the stalk, pulsed horribly. A wet, musty smell suffused the fog. At once, the clocks went off together, rippling the vapours with a violent carillon, and then they all stopped.
"Mortarion," said a voice.
The demon Primarch opened his eyes. They were shot through with the root systems of the fungus, the whites veined with black threads that extended into the yellow of his irises. Beneath the clock was an image of Kugath, the Plague Father, Great Unclean One, and Favoured of Nurgle. It wavered as if seen through a jet of forge heat. There were similarities with an imperial hololith, but they were entirely superficial. The head looked real behind its curtain of heat, severed as if it had been carved from the body so that the veins and ways of the organism could be seen around the edges, as if in an anatomical cross-section.
"Plague, Father," said Mortarion.
He bowed his cadaverous head. Kugath respectfully returned the gesture. The ragged skin and exposed fats of his chins creased under his jaw.
"Where is the third? Where is your wayward son?"
said the greater demon.
"I am here, summoned by the Mycota Profundis, as is our bargain,"
said a surly voice. A second image materialized, this one of a helmeted plague marine, one horn jutting from the brow of his malformed cataphracti terminator plate. Layers of diseased flesh, fat and bone, parts merged with the being's armor, were visible, again, as if cut away. Osseous tubes rose behind his head, and an infernal buzzing accompanied his words that threatened to drown them out. For all the racket of Typhus's manifestation, his contempt was clear when he spoke.
Jean, father, he said.
My son, said Mortarion.
His tone was coolly indifferent, whereas his son's was provocative.
We are gathered, then, the three champions, followers of the seventh path, masters of life and death. Not yet, masters, said Kugath,
with a sorrowful shake of his great horned head.
Unworthy acolytes! The time of your redemption is at hand, said Mortarion. The sevenfold way opens. The seven campaigns of this invasion bear fruit ready to rot. Robute Gilliman has returned to Ultramar.
Kugath gave a sly look of delight, almost a smile. Typhus laughed.
You are foolish, my lord father, if you think this will end well, said the first captain. We should have finished his realm while he was absent.
Typhus, Typhus, said Mortarion. So long you have lived, and so little you have learnt. What use is the destruction of a kingdom without the death of the king?
A king without a kingdom is no king, but a vagabond. His suffering would have been pleasant meat to savour, said Typhus. You court disaster in confronting him. This employment of the Hand of Darkness is convoluted and foolhardy. Simplicity was the watchword of our legion. The direct attack, the withering of pain, not this deviousness. This was not the plan of the Great Father.
It is my plan, said Mortarion,
his gloomy voice rising stridently.
And its success will honour the Great Father. He entrusts us with our will and our initiative. I will use mine. He will be pleased.
If you succeed, said Typhus.
He looked around the horarium disdainfully.
You are blinded by the past, as always, my lord. You look to Barbarous and remake it wherever you go. Embrace change fully. Embrace chaos. Abandon these schemes. Let us drown Ultramar in disease and move on.
Mortarion flung up his arms and spread his wings.
I have, and this is my reward. I am remade in terrible image. I am become death.
You do not believe, not truly, said Typhus. You have paid nothing for your power. The false emperor made you Jean Father. Nurgle took you as a prize. You are a trophy, my lord. You would never have found your way to enlightenment without me. Without me, you would have nothing. You would be dead, your soul dispersed into the warp. I fought my way into the Great Father's attention. I became his herald by will and by the dint of my own efforts. What have you done to win his favor?
Curb your insolence, said Mortarion.
Or what, my lord? I have Nurgle's favor. You would not dare to move against me. You think that you are in control, that your new being is separate from the warp and yours to do with as you will. It is not. It is Nurgle's. You must submit to him fully, or Grandfather will have hard lessons for you. This plan of yours to lead your brother on Nurgle's dance, it is ill-conceived. If we must strike, strike now. We should gather our fleets and cripple his forces while they gather at Macragg. Do not allow him the luxury of time to consult with his warriors or consolidate his position.
Do not presume to tell me what to do, said Mortarion.
You will work with us. I will do as I please, said Typhus. If only you would abandon the last of your being to the Lord of Life, you would see. You have no power over me. You do not truly understand. If you did, then you and I might be reconciled. Do you level the same criticism against Kugoth, First Captain?
Said Mortarion icily.
You dare speak to him in that way? He is as flawed as you in his own way,
said Typhus.
Maudlin, where you are nostalgic.
Kugoth nodded dolefully.
You are right. I am unworthy. So unworthy. I cannot help it. All Kugoth cares for is setting right the loss his birth caused,
said Typhus.
He at least desires to honor Nurgle through his efforts, and so can be forgiven. You seek to honor yourself. You do your own work with this fool's errand. Give him a day too many, and Robute Gilliman will defeat you, and we shall lose all hope of bringing Ultramar within the walls of Nurgle's manse.
You will obey me. You will follow our plan,
said Mortarion.
I require your Victorium at Espandor when the time comes.
Typhus snorted.
You cannot command me as you once did. I am high in the favor of the Plague God, equal to you in his eyes, if not higher. Who was it who delivered him the Death Guard? It was I, not you. You still do not understand the true nature of chaos. I do. I am following our plan as originally formulated. The blessing of the Great Father was on that strategy, not on this quest for vengeance. You deceived me, Mortarion. You intended to play with your brother all along. This will displease the Plague God. I will continue as we originally agreed. I will have no part in this folly.
If you will not come to Espandor, you will be at Parmenio. The numbers do not lie, my son. It is calculable. Great Nurgle will command, it is so. It is preordained.
Maybe there is hope for you,
said Typhus.
More and more you dabble with the warp's true power. Perhaps one day you will master it and leave your bitterness against your barbarian father behind you. But you are wrong if you believe that I will fight at your side. You have no real foresight. I will not be there to help you, no matter what your numerology says. And now I go. Be warned, little father. I have the ear of the Great Father himself.
Typhus's image blurred and vanished. The part of the mycelium mat supporting his warp ghost twitched and decayed into putrid slime. Mortarion stared long and hard at the space where his wayward son had been.
And you, Kugoth,
said Mortarion,
are you against me also? I stand with you, favored son of the Great Father,
said Kugoth.
You see the chance for revenge, I for redemption. Together we may serve ourselves and the will of Papa Nurgle.
In the main, demons were beyond the comprehension of men. Many were bizarre things, their motives inexplicable, even to Mortarion, who was now more demon than human himself. Kugoth was different. His profound regret made him relatable. The misery he wallowed in was something mankind knew only too well, and Mortarion knew misery best of all.
Your plan is working, said the demon. The dead walk across the worlds we foul. The peons of Ultramar have had their eyes open to their slavery and shake their fists at their blue masters. We shall combine forces when the time is right. We shall prevail. I need but a little more time to perfect my new concoction. Every strain of the galaxy's finest diseases contribute their essence to its creation. There has never been anything like it.
His voice came close to enthusiasm.
It will be as devastating as you desire, and more so. The finest plague, enough to slay a demigod. Delay the Primarch. Keep him from Ajax. Rot his empire, and when he is full of despair, we shall strike, and we shall kill him.
Ku'gath withdrew from the communion. More of the mycelium mat fell into decay. Mortarion pulled himself free of the clinging tendrils, and with a wet rustle, it shrank in on itself, shriveling up to nothing. His eyes cleared. The fungal spike in the room's center collapsed into a mouldering heap that rapidly deliquesced into stinking water. Mortarion walked across the slippery floor and hung silence again upon its chain. He held the scythe's head in one hand and petted it before drawing it back across the room.
Soon, silence, we will reap the greatest prize of all, the death of my brother.
He set it swinging. The great clock restarted, their king ticking again. So did all the others.
What do you think of that, father?
Said the Lord of Death. The soul in the flask screamed at him and raced around its confinement. The machines constraining it buzzed with the additional strain.
Shh, said Mortarion. You will need your strength. I have neglected you for too long. I have new stimuli for you to enjoy, new pains and soul fevers. Such times we will have, you and I, when the hateful Imperium is overthrown. An eternity to explore the rotting of the spirit. The galaxy will be free of stagnation, and there will be a riot of life in its place. The Emperor offers death in life. Nurgle offers the constant renewal of life in death. So many of the Emperor's loyal subjects will join with us when they see how their suffering may be banished by embracing pain. Typhus says I do not understand, Father. But I do. I understand far better than him. With Gilliman gone, the Imperium will be doomed. All glory to the generosity of Father Nurgle. It has been foretold, and I shall make it so.
Mortarion went to stand by a bank of valves and wheels hidden behind an array of clocks. The activated workings connected to the tubes that ran into the glass prison. He let his hand hover over them, tormenting the spirit of his Xenos father with anticipation of the soul-rotting poisons he might unleash. Under his breathing mask, what remained of Mortarion's mouth smiled. He let his hand drop. Leaving the wheels untouched, he departed the Horarium. The third part of Mortarion's plan was in motion. He would leave Gilliman to his victory at Ardium. On other worlds, in other places, Mortarion would weaken him, poisoning his mind, body, and soul, just as he poisoned the mind, body, and soul of Gilliman's realm. And then, Mortarion would destroy his brother.